TV Corner.
Hey guys, welcome to another Film Core TV Corner Game of Thrones podcast. Today we're going to be jumping into Game of Thrones Season 7, Episode 3, Queen's Justice. With me I have our veteran TJ, and Lulu is back this week.
What's going on? Hey.
I just want to say that this episode was my favorite of the season so far, hands down.
Yeah.
Agreed.
We only have three to compare.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm just saying, it's only getting better from here.
This is a really good episode.
All right, well, let's jump right in.
Some tables are turned.
Yeah, tables are turned.
I think that's what makes a good episode.
Maybe all the tables, to be honest. Well, let's jump right in. Once again, I'm going to go place by place instead of order of the show because it's, like, easier to talk about and follow the chain of events in each location. So, we're going to get started with Dragonstone. Jon arrives with Ser Davos. They take all their weapons, and he goes to meet Dany, where things don't go as well as I think we hope. I don't know. Is this the beginning of a good rom-com?
I
don't know.
I think you're like Mr. Darcy and...
Can we call it a meet cute?
Yeah. Harry and Sally kind of vibe going on. But are they kind of related? Are we okay with that?
Yeah, but nobody needs to know that. I'm into it. Can we pinpoint a meet cute between them, though? Is there a moment?
As a viewer, I think we're more okay with it just because we haven't seen them, like, actually grow up together. And we know, historically, Targaryens have married, like, brother-sister kind of setup. So, and also we have Cersei and Jaime. So I think that, in a way, we kind of have been,
desynthesized. normalized.
Yeah.
Incest, I guess.
Yeah, we have definitely. So I think it's
incest
not
is the least
weird.
Of our worries at this point.
Yeah, Game of Thrones is doing a really good job breaking those barriers. Walls.
Breaking down those judgment walls.
yeah, I think they're really cute. They make sense. They're very similar, like how their backstories as characters make similar. So I'm like, it makes sense that eventually they would fall in love. And yeah, it was very intense. I didn't know who to cheer for in that interaction because I don't know. I mean, Dany, she got through a lot of shit.
I mean, I think that's a great point.
Well, they've both been through so much.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Like, at first, she's like, this guy was like, well, he died and came back.
I think they might have missed that point or overlooked it. I don't know if they quite believed it.
John definitely was like, hey, let's not bring that up right now because he doesn't really understand the full depths of like why he was even brought back.
Yeah.
Doesn't really want to get into it. At this point, he's just like, I just want to get the dragon glass.
Yeah.
What did you guys think about, it's the first time we've really seen John sort of explaining the whole White Walker situation to someone who isn't a Northerner. Because the Northerners are more superstitious and kind of are more likely to believe it. And a lot of other men that were with him there had also seen the Whites. So him going to now a new group of strangers and being like, listen, I know you care about the throne, but we got White Walkers coming.
I think she should kind of, if anybody was to believe that, it should be her because she raised those dragons when everybody said they were going to be extinct forever. If she could raise dragons, I think she has the capacity to believe in these White Walkers.
I thought it was interesting. It added to their dynamic. He had to bring this news to her, like to a character that he doesn't know. Like we all of us know both of these characters, right? We all have our backstory and we know them and we've come to love them, but they don't know each other. So like he's coming in, he's got to explain all this crazy stuff to her, and you know, it's, I don't know how it is Daenerys is viewing him. Like she doesn't know much about what goes on in the Seven Kingdoms, and even in the Seven Kingdoms people from the north are like, you know, a little bit behind the times and superstitious and slightly brutish, you know, so he kind of comes in sounding immediately like this crazy barbarian from the north. I got these,
but she likes that.
Dead's coming.
I think, definitely.
Maybe, but like,
it's kind of like when you have like country people, you know, come into the city and it's like, well, yeah, but you're like out there, like, you know, you're in the city now, so you know nothing about those White Walkers.
Right.
I think that ultimately, I think that Dany is, I don't know if she believes him 100%, But she, I think she kind of understands at the same time she can't come to this new land, well, come to Westeros, expect to conquer it, and really offer nothing to people who need her help. And I think she's learned that, like, if she wants people's loyalty, she has to offer them assistance when they ask for it. So I think by saying, hey, you guys can have Dragonglass from Dragonstone, and she even offers, hey, if you need some forces, I'll offer those. So she is saying, like, hey, I don't really know what's going on, but I'm here to support you in figuring out how to solve this problem.
I'm saying, how do you think both sides are going to take that? Like, the fact that she's allowing him to do this, I mean, I don't know if she's going to expect him to bend the knee, but I don't think, even if she does allow all this to go on and help them win this war, I don't think the Lords of the North are going to want him to, you know, submit to the Southern Kingdoms again. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
To the Iron Throne.
They're going to get married.
Do you think that's going to end up in some kind of clash of interest here?
He's going to bend the knees to propose.
Do you? Oh, that's a good insight. I mean, TJ, honestly, I think they would be kind of like, whoa, the fuck? But I think if, to Lulu's point, if it were like, hey, I'm gonna marry Daenerys and we're about to really get stuff going, I think they definitely would get behind that. And at this point, I don't know if we have time for any more northern squabble, like, over this whole issue. You know what I mean? I feel like we've kind of, like, already moved past it. I think that if Jon returns back to Winterfell and not, like, killed, like, his uncle was and Ned was, then I think that they'll have more faith in her in general. What about Melisandre and Varys' conversation, like, on the windiest tower of Dragonstone?
Yeah, if he had hair, it would blow.
Yeah.
I think Varys, he was a little catty in this scene, wasn't he? Like, I don't know if he knows her. He doesn't know her personally, right? But it seemed like he had some kind of personal vendetta.
Well, I think it's like game recognizes game. I think anytime he's around anyone who's kind of on that same level of, like, spying and gathering information and kind of being somewhat shady, he's always kind of, like, has that edge around them. Because he's like that with Littlefinger, too, where he's just I'm watching you. What did you guys think about the fact that she said, we'll both die in Westeros? Do you think it was, like, a nod to what Varys heard in the flames, or just a general statement of saying, you know, everyone dies, we're both going to die here?
I think it was a nod to the flames. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, that's totally a nod to the flames. Like, she knows what he has to go through, I think. She may not know everything, but I think she knows about the spider and his destiny. He knows, right? Because that's what he heard in the flames.
Yeah, so, I mean, there's some great secret, perhaps, prophecy we don't know that, like, Varys is fulfilling. Well, speaking of prophecies, or speaking of knowing, or speaking of, I don't know, I'll segue this, let's go into King's Landing. Euron drags in Ilaria Sand and her daughter to Cersei. Did you guys think that Cersei's torture plan was evil enough?
I think it was super evil.
You don't think it was bad enough?
I don't know. I mean,
it's not just watching her die, right? She's, like, gonna make her watch her decay in front of her. That's super. Like, you're gonna live here until you're dead.
Smell the rotting.
And you're gonna
corpse.
Watch your daughter just decay. We're gonna keep you alive.
Yeah, it's not only like a visual thing, but it's like a
smeller. You can watch her face collapse into bone and.
I mean,
dust.
I kind of expected, like, I don't know, like, her daughter is just gonna decay. Yeah, she's gonna die. But I mean, I'm not saying it wasn't evil. I'm just saying it was almost.
She's gonna be a pile of bones, and she's gonna be an old woman.
I thought Cersei was gonna cut her into pieces, then feed her the poison, then make her watch her die. I don't know, but.
Oh, man. I think that's too complicated.
It's too complicated.
That's pretty dark. Armani, I think you...
I've watched too much Game of Thrones?
Pump the brakes a bit. yeah, you watched too much Game of Thrones.
Do you think that Ilaria Sand is actually going to be stuck down there the whole time? Do you think she'll be rescued? I mean, I really think her daughter's dead. Like, I'm not going to argue that she'll make it out of that. But,
Oh, she's definitely going to be rescued and probably suffer some PTSD, you know, like...
I don't know if she's going to be rescued, but I think she might be down there until the walkers come and decide everybody's fate.
I mean, I just want to back up a little bit. I mean, do we really sympathize? I mean, I know we don't like Cersei, But in all honesty, I mean, Ilaria Sen doesn't really have a reason to have murdered Marcella. Like, Marcella had nothing to do with it, and also Oberyn wasn't murdered. He willingly fought in this battle that he showed that he lost. Like, straight up. He just lost. So I don't understand. And so, in some ways, I side with Cersei on this. It's kind of some BS.
I think so, too. I agree with that. I feel like Cersei...
I agree, actually. I was thinking the same thing.
I'm not very sympathetic for Ilaria at all. It's a Game of Thrones, so I think, like, she got what she deserves, really.
I mean, it isn't much better in the books, but I also kind of blame the show for not really, like, fleshing out Dorne further and making us more invested in the characters anyway. Because I think we didn't really understand what was going on with them, and...
Yeah, maybe the characters are just not that good fleshed out, but it's cool seeing Cersei be so evil, but, like, with a purpose, you know?
Yeah, I mean, Cersei's winning. Cersei's having the best year ever, honestly. And speaking of doing, how about her and Jaime now openly twin-cesting?
I think that's going to be the last of that. You know, I don't think they're going to keep that affair going. I think Jaime is...
Yeah, I actually didn't think they were even gonna get together any at all again. So, but I mean, Cersei is in control at this point, and she even really exerts that control when she speaks to the Iron Bank about how she's gonna be able to pay them back in 2 weeks. Well, moving into Winterfell, Sansa takes control with Littlefinger as sort of a creepy wannabe advisor. She seems to be doing pretty good at it and seems to have a knack for leading at this point. But then she gets thrown a curveball when Bran shows up super cold and creepy.
Yeah, Bran was pretty annoying. His performance, I think, is pretty annoying. And I think that they kind of, like, allowed him to move into that deadpan flatline character just because he's not a great actor, but
I didn't know you felt this way.
Yeah, he was very...
They got him as a child.
I'm not a fan of Bran. I'm a fan of the character. I'm not a fan of Bran himself or the dude who's playing Bran.
I mean, I will say that I don't necessarily like that the direction of, like, I know it all now, so I'm going to be an aloof asshole, which is, I feel like, the kind of the character he's automatically taken on. Like, oh, I know everything, Sansa. It's too long to explain to you. You couldn't possibly understand. And I'm like, you could just say in 3 sentences, hey, I can see everything that's happened and has happened. That's it. You don't have to be, like, dismissive of her. And also bring up a super terrible
and
time
in
her
life. And why the hell would he... Yeah, the first way he showcases his power to her is to, like, bring up her traumatic wedding night. So unnecessary.
He could have just been like, hey, I know you ate lemon cakes on August 23rd. That could have been the end of that, like, point proven. You know, not like, let me bring up one of the worst days of your life.
Yeah, exactly.
But, I mean, what do you guys think that's going to mean for Littlefinger and, like, kind of that whole dynamic? Because now Bran knows everything that's ever happened, including Littlefinger's betrayal of Ned Stark.
Well, he already seemed like he wasn't having that much control or power.
Hopefully
Bran,
he
so
can, like...
Probably gonna lash out.
I'm hoping that he brings in... Bran brings in some information on Littlefinger. If he's gonna be useful at all, like... Let Sansa know that Littlefinger isn't to be trusted.
No, I mean, honestly, technically, so Bran would be the rightful heir to Winterfell. I mean, he could renounce it, and I don't think he would fight with Jon on the title. But if Littlefinger tried to pull any kind of maneuver, it definitely would be much weaker now. So Littlefinger's going to either want Bran gone or is going to leave himself just to protect his best interests. Because at this point, the best thing for Littlefinger to do would just be to go back to the Vale. Let's go into Old Town. Long story short, or too long didn't read, Jorah's healed, Sam isn't fired.
Yeah, that's cool. I think Sam is going to find out some stuff with all that paperwork that he...
that paperwork.
He was was that paperwork?
Just has to copy scrolls. But yeah, I think it's pretty obvious that, like, maybe this maester is actually leading him along a better journey than we think. You know, like, maybe he's trying to actually slowly feed him information in some weird, like, Dumbledore-esque way. speaking of promotions, let's move into Castle Rock, where Grey Worm is promoted to military general, which he has been, I guess. I don't know. Let's just go into Castle Rock.
Okay. Yeah.
The Unsullied take it, or so they think. It turns out they were just, it was a trap that the Lannisters planted for them and used Castle Rock as a decoy while they went and invaded High Garden. Things are looking pretty grim for Grey Worm, because now he's basically trapped in Castle Rock without supplies. Meanwhile, the Lannisters take High Garden, and Ooh. Lady Olenna steals the scene, or actually the entire episode, with her speech at the end.
Yeah, Lady Olenna, like, I like how she saved that that big reveal.
Yeah, Lady.
I love that she chugged the wine, you know, so it's like, oh, let me, like, you know, pour this one out real fast, and then it was like, hey, I got some shit to tell you. But, yeah, no, that was amazing.
Yeah, she grabbed that wine real quick.
Yeah, before you change your mind, like, how are you
doing? Yeah, before you change your mind. Yeah, because I'm about to tell you some shit right now, so I need to get this over with. Were you guys surprised by her confession, her saying that she killed Joffrey, or were you like, yeah, I thought so?
And it sucks about this confession because Jaime made a whole point of, like, I'm choosing the most humane way to kill you, despite my sister wife. She wanted to, like, have you hung or decapitated in front of everybody, but here's some poison, I got you. And she's like, drinks it all, and it's like,
blade.
I mean, I think it definitely was.
Well, I think that was really for Cersei more than for him. Mm-hmm. Like, he had to know his son sucked, but, like, Cersei actually loved Joffrey. I guess they both did.
I don't know. I mean,
I think
I think that if you remember, Cersei said to Ellaria, she said, Marcella was my favorite, and you're not supposed to have favorites, but we're only human. So, I mean, I think deep down, Joffrey was not mm-hmm. high on the list of favorite kids. So I think that...
I mean, she slapped the shit out of him once. And
yeah, no one really liked Joffrey that much. I mean, if anything, Cersei would take it more as, like, an ego, kind of like a slight towards her ego. But I think that, I mean, at this point, I think it's whatever. She's like, what's done is done. I've already killed her and taken High Garden, so I already won. I think Jaime, being less power hungry, is going to care more about the loss of his child than the victory at High Garden.
I think he's going to go through a lot, Jaime. You know, just hearing how his sister is a monster, you know, I mean, what do you think is going to happen between their relationship after that conversation between Cersei and Jaime?
I think a lot of what Lady Olenna was telling Jaime was good for him to hear, just because he has to make a decision pretty soon on whether he's going to support Cersei until the bitter end.
Uh-huh.
And it looks like, even though the tables are going to be turning here in Cersei's favor for at least a while, so he might be asked to do some things that he might not be comfortable with. I think it's decision time for Jaime, and Lady Olenna definitely won this scene.
In a way, Jaime's definitely going to be tired of this, tired of, like, what is the whole point? Initially, he had kind of taken the stance of, like, well, Cersei's going to bring peace to Westeros, so what does it matter how that peace is accomplished? But I think that at the same time, I think he's just realizing that the game isn't worth it anymore. That the level of manipulation and lying and lives lost along the way isn't really worth it, you know? And that even his victories don't feel like victories anymore. Yeah, TJ, TJ, do you have any more predictions?
Yeah, I think this scene, or this episode, really brings home the idea, the fact that Cersei and the Red Keep, look, the Lannisters aren't out of it yet. Like, they're very much in it right now. They're, like, almost turned the tables almost completely. They've gotten rid of Highgarden. The Dornish army is not accessible to them right now. They just cut off the Unsullied on the other side of the world. I think it's gonna be interesting to see what happens from here out. But I was convinced that this was gonna be a pretty sweeping, easy victory for Daenerys, yeah. And that does not look like the way it's gonna play out. So I'm gonna be very interested to see where it goes from here.
I mean, definitely. That's what I think we really enjoy about this show is that the things that, I mean, the best laid plans of mice and men are often laid to waste. We think it's really going to go one way, and it seems like all the cards are stacked in this one person's favor. And then very quickly, we see it all fall apart. And I'm pretty sure by the end of this series, we're going to be really surprised with how things
so quickly
end up. Well, thank you guys so much for jumping on this week's podcast with me. And I'll see you next week.
Bye, thanks. Bum 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 b